When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Streamed and Screened, an entertainment podcast about movies and TV from Lee Enterprises. I'm Terry Lipschutz, managing editor of the National Newsroom at Lee and co-host of the program with Bruce Miller, editor of the Sioux City Journal and a longtime entertainment reporter. Bruce, a lot going on now. We've got TV series, we have movies, we've got celebs, we got John Bon Jovi, so much.
We get through the final four and then look what happens.
Everything's going on, but we have a return of Lily Gladstone. She's back.
Yeah, isn't it weird how you think, well, now she was nominated for an Oscar. What is she going to do next? Well, she already had done it. And actually, the film had been finished. Well, she was like, you know, there was the talk about it, but nothing like it was when it came out. And so Lily Gladstone wasn't that kind of blue chip name when they hired her for Under the Bridge. In fact, she had to try and get the part like everybody else did. And she plays a cop in this kind of docu-reality series, limited, fictionalized, whatever you'd want to call it, called Under the Bridge. It's set in Canada and is about a teenage girl who was killed. And then they try to figure out who was responsible for this. And it was a big deal in Canada in 1997. It was like the news. And then a woman wrote a book about it and talked to as many of the people that were involved as she could reach. And then they optioned the book for a limited series. And that's where all of this comes into play. I had a chance to talk with the producers, and they kind of explained some of how it all kind of shook down before it got to this point where it's now ready to be seen by everybody. So I have Quinn Shepherd and Samir Mehta, who are the producers. They also directed and they also wrote on this series. And you'll get a chance to hear them talk about how did we get Lily Gladstone? So here you go. Run the tape. I'm curious, what point did you hire Lily for this? Had she finished Flower Moon, or had she, how does it all work out?
I believe she had finished it, but it was still about a year out from anyone seeing the film. And yeah, we actually heard about her through Rebecca Godfrey herself.
Yeah, she had, Rebecca, the real Rebecca, had a friend who had worked on the set of Killers and who said, hey, you like have got to see this actress for this role. And I mean, Lily's incredible. And we watched her work in some of her previous films and Certain Women and just thought she was quite literally perfect for it.
So then was all of the Flower Moon stuff happening then while you were filming, or what was that?
No, I think she had wrapped the film and was just waiting for release.
So it hadn't been released by that?
No, not at all.
No.
Pairing her with Riley, what was that all about?
It's really sweet because I think they had like a kind of online friendship before, but they'd never met in real
life.
They
were pen pals.
Yeah. They're like Instagram pen pals. So Riley got it. I mean, you could tell the story about Riley getting
mad. So I had just moved into a new house and I met my neighbor just taking out the trash, told him, oh yeah, like I'm sure running this new Hulu show. And he was like, oh, you know, I'm actually friends with Riley Keough. Like, it sounds like she'd probably be pretty good for this. It was honestly just that simple.
Yeah. We were like, yeah, she's the actress for this.
How unbelievable. But yeah. When you're dealing with a real story, what's the responsibility there for you? I'm sure it's much greater than anything fictional.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, yeah, just as a writer, obviously you have to adhere to reality best you can. You kind of can't go anywhere with the story. But then within that reality, so to speak, which became a bit of a fluid term, you know, there's the facts, there's also the accounting of what happened through whatever publications exist, but then there's you kind of as an artist going in fresh, ingesting all of that material and reading between the lines, coming up with stories that might have been hidden in between those publications. And pulling it out in a way that is maybe not yet exposed, but equally as real as what has already been reported.
Do you talk to the real people or not? Do you say that just complicates matters?
No, I mean, we did. So I spent almost 3 years working with Rebecca Godfrey. And Manjeet largely handled the conversations with Manjeet Virk, father of Rena Virk. We also optioned Manjeet's book as part of the development of the show so that we were sort of getting more of his stories about the interiority of their family and Rena's childhood, sort of his story of meeting Suman and all of that, which we get to explore in the show as well. We didn't talk to anybody else involved. I think it is sort of a thing that you have to kind of keep a bit streamlined. But yeah, of course, it's very sensitive, and it really makes you aware of how very real all of this was to everyone who experienced it.
When you're dealing with a story, too, that most people, at least from that area, would know, how do you decide how we're going to tell it? I love the flashback aspect of all of it, but how do you determine that's what it's going to be?
Yeah, a large part of our process was, looking at, obviously, Rebecca's version of events, Manjeet's version of events, all of the various coverage, and then actually including all of it so that it could kind of come together in some form of coherence that is actually telling a larger truth by virtue of having all of it. And then there was us two, and then all the writers just sort of speaking about what it was doing to us emotionally, which it was our attempt to maybe get in the heads of just the locals who were experiencing this for the first time. And beyond that, to be honest, because we shot so close to where it really happened, just being up there for the better part of a year, we encountered so many people who actually lived through it. Even just people on our own crew came up to us and said, this was a really personal news story for me when I was growing up. And so there was a lot of really personal connection.
So there's a big responsibility too that comes with that.
Definitely.
And when you get all that information just coming in, do you say, okay, no, don't tell me anything more. I don't want to hear anything more, because it's just going to complicate things.
No, I think we definitely invited anything in that we could.
Yeah, I think we invited it all. And then it was sort of like, when you're alone is when you have to sort through how it makes you feel.
Yeah.
I think we definitely both experienced, I know Samir was talking about earlier, there was an article that back in the 90s that had come out about, or I guess early 2000s, about Rebecca and her experience writing the book. And the headline was "The Story That Swallowed Her Whole." And I think that both of us, when we came into it, saw that, we're like, wow, how fascinating that this woman got very absorbed by this story. And then the same thing gradually happened to both of us, where you really, it becomes a part of you. I've worked on, we both worked on this for many years. And it's such a dark place to have to go to mentally, that it really does become a part of you. You're so aware of the responsibility of it and the fact that this is a very known true story, especially in Canada. I think we just hope we've done right by the people.
Is it hard to say goodbye to a story like this because it is such a big part of your life?
I think we're ready to be honest. I mean,
when you want a light comedy, it's been
4 or 5 years. I've been for 2 or 3 years. I think maybe a comedy is next for the both of us.
Yeah, I think it's a bit emotional for me because Rebecca was a friend of mine. She came to be a really close person in my life, and so I think in a way, she passed away a few weeks before we started shooting, but I continued to be able to write her until we had finished writing the series. And in some ways, even in the edit, you're still doing that. I think that there's a grief to that, because in some ways it's like you're getting to spend time with your friend. I think that part will be the saddest for me, but I also think we're ready to be sort of free from the darkness of it.
When you're working with a lot of young people, how do you convey to them how truly important this story is?
It's funny. I don't think we needed to tell them. They knew.
I think it was, it was a bit of, transference. It was just we showed up, I think, pretty behaving in a way that everyone understood. This is a very sobering event. It needs to be taken seriously. It needs to be handled respectfully. And I think just setting that tone, everybody sort of got it and was really just lovely to work with.
They all really wanted to do justice by Rena.
Yeah.
From day one.
What do you think viewers will take from this? What will they learn?
For me, the kind of guiding thesis of the show has always been, you know, the title of our pilot is Looking Glass, which is like the meaning of Rena's name, but it's also sort of, you know, a metaphor about the show being a mirror. I think in the 90s, this crime was sort of a mirror where so many people looked at it and sort of had to confront things in their own lives. And for all of us who worked on the show, it became that. And so I think I at least hope that audiences will take this less so of a this is who's right and this is who's wrong and this is what you should learn, but that, like, you know, everyone who looks in the mirror will see something different reflected back, that everyone will take something different away from the story.
Yeah, and I think that my hope is that the instinct to point the finger outside goes away, and that the story inspires people to kind of look at what parts of the darkness on display here are actually a part of me, and what can I do by myself in my own home to examine that and kind of bring it into consciousness so that I can be aware of it and ideally integrate it.
Thanks, Bruce, for that interview. I thought it was really fascinating how you can basically cast somebody in the most unusual ways. Like, you bump into your neighbor. Now, of course, this wouldn't happen to me because I'm not living among Hollywood people, but it's like, hey, neighbor.
I don't take out the garbage, so there we are, right?
Right, exactly. But it's like, oh, hey, yeah, I know somebody who would be perfect for you.
But, you know, it's kind of like in our business where we hear people say, I've got a great story idea. And you go, oh, really? Thanks. I'm real glad to hear that. You know, and I bet that's what it's like there, where they do get people pitching them somebody all the time. Usually, though, it's like, I have a great idea for you. It's me, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, no, thank you. But yeah, it is fascinating. And look at Riley Keough's huge, and Lily Gladstone is huge. The timing couldn't be better for them in terms of, you know, having a project. And it really holds up. I've seen four of the episodes.
Okay.
And they do flashbacks that help you understand the story. It kind of fills in the gaps that you don't understand at that point. So then you get a flashback that helps you figure out, okay, that's what that is. That's what that means. And then the two women are also, they had been friends in an earlier part of their lives. So they have a relationship as well that continues through all of this.
Okay. I feel this is good timing too for this show, because I feel like I'm a little bit in between programs right now. I'm doing a little bit of catch-up work. So on my own, I've been watching Griselda on Netflix, which is a bit of a spinoff of the Narcos series, just a limited series. So I've been doing that on my own. With my wife, we've been watching Lessons in Chemistry on Apple TV Plus, just kind of getting caught up on things.
You're not done with that?
No, we never started it. So we just decided to just knock through it now. So it feels like this could be a good one to just hit next, because we're desperate right now.
It's True Detective in a way. It's also Mayor of Eastwick.
I East Town, right? Yeah, East this Town. Feels like, yeah, this does feel, I was gonna bring this up. Yeah, it's like it feels like a real life Mayor of East Town type of situation.
Yeah, it has a very similar vibe and that same kind of twistiness.
Okay.
If you know what I mean? It takes everything you can not to go look it up on Wikipedia, how the case turned out. Because you say, oh, I want to know, but then you want to see it. So hold off. Now, we talk about, you know, where people live. Jersey, come on.
Jersey, gotta love Jersey.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
John Bon Jovi decided he wanted to do a documentary for the 40th year of Bon Jovi, and he wanted it to be warts and all. He wanted everything included. He didn't want anybody to just feel like they couldn't say anything. So in this 4-part documentary, he has people who were mad at him, former members of the group, you know, everybody who could say something, because he doesn't want to feel. Now, I'm sure if I were one of those people and I knew that, you know, John could really hurt me, I probably wouldn't say anything. But Richie Sambora is there, so what the hey? You're probably in it, right? Aren't you in it? You were tight with John.
I'm pretty tight. I have met him. I've actually spoken to him. It's just kind of in a strange situation. So I grew up in Jersey, and a number of years ago, it's probably about 20 years ago now, I went to a just a regional sports editors convention in Atlantic City, and one of our keynote speakers was Jon Bon Jovi, because he was trying to drum up interest in his arena football team. But I did get to meet him and talk to him briefly, so that was kind of cool. But he actually is from my hometown of Sayreville, New Jersey. He's, you know, local legend. He didn't go to Sayreville High School for all 4 years. He started at, I think it was like St. Joseph's of Metuchen. And I believe the story goes that he got like kicked out of it or something didn't work out right. And then he ended up finishing off his senior year at Sayreville.
Was he troubled?
Maybe he was just preoccupied with rock, you know? But he's like 14, 15 years older than me. So, but there were always a number of teachers that I had who were like, oh, John, he was the greatest. We love John. And I ended up at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame one time, and I saw his report card on display with teachers that I had. And it was like C+. And I'm thinking to myself, okay, I think we've got some revisionist history going on here.
Does not apply himself. I interviewed him back in the, is it 1990 when Young Guns 2 came out? He had done the song Blaze of Glory for that. You could tell he was really eager to get an Oscar nomination for that. I mean, he was so nice. He was like the nicest guy ever. And you think the shoe is going to drop at some point. There's got to be a shoe drop here somewhere. But he was real cool, very nice, very user friendly. And then I hadn't seen him until this docuseries was being promoted. I felt sorry for him because he has this vocal cord problem. And they're trying to build it up so that he can do it. And, you know, he said, I wasn't just somebody who was just out there screaming. I actually can sing. I do have a voice. And he said, I've sung with people like Pavarotti. So, you know, you got to have some kind of chops. And I bet that would be very difficult if your calling card suddenly disappeared on you. What do you do? I think he could easily segue to acting or something else.
Oh, well, he's been in a number of films too. He was in that, he was in U571. I don't believe his character made it to the end of that movie, but he's been in a few things here and there. He can act.
He was, but he hasn't done anything for at least 10 years. So, you know, if that's the goal. But I think he really wants to get back and sing. He did sing in February. There was a salute to him during the Grammy week.
Yeah.
And he did sing a song. So, you know, he can do. But I think trying to do a tour with how many nights, good luck.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know that that's necessarily going to happen.
What was his little trivia for you, Bruce?
Okay.
Do you know what his first recorded song was? His first album appearance.
Oh, I do not.
It was on a Christmas album. Did you know he performed on a Christmas album? Yeah.
With Gary Como and Andy Williams and all those.
Most
like
certainly
one of those,
not.
Those Osmond kids that came out at some point.
No. There's this little known Christmas album released in 1980, Christmas in the Stars. It's a Star Wars themed record.
Oh, man.
Yes. His cousin, I believe his name is Tony
Guido?
Bon Jovi. No, Tony Bon Jovi is a record producer, music producer. But he was producing, like, there's this artist, his name was Miko, and he did, I don't know, like, the Star Wars and Intergalactic Funk. Do you remember that? They play, it's like a,
oh, man.
It's
like, you know,
it's like, yeah, it's that album. He followed it up with a Christmas album. And there's this song called R2-D2, We Wish You a Merry Christmas. And on that song, Jon Bon Jovi is providing like the vocals with C-3PO, with the beeps of R2-D2, and then there's like children singing also. It is the strangest song.
Does he get credit?
Yes. Yeah, he's on it.
Wow.
He may have actually been credited. I'd have to check the album, but it may actually credit him with the real spelling of his last name, which is not B-O-N-J-O-V.
It's like Giovanni or something like that.
Yeah, it's a very Italian last name. Yeah, so that's Jon Bon Jovi's proud start to his career. I'm assuming the four-part documentary glanced over that, but I don't know. You did you see it
yet? That could be the prequel. They'll come back to that and then hit those early years, right?
Yep, exactly. That would be the very early years of Jon Bon Jovi. So yeah, I'll definitely check that one out. That is a no-brainer for me. I will totally be on top of that one. All right, well, we'll move past John now, and as I said I can't wait to see that. But there's so we've had a crime drama, we've got a documentary, so we need a comedy, right?
Comedy. Yeah, and this week a new one starts, and it's interesting because it's more like those R-rated films that you get where they're a little more adult than you think. It's made like a sitcom that would run on CBS, but they get to use words and situations that only run on Showtime. Or so don't say that just because it says it's called Dinner with the Parents, it's something we should gather the kids around, because there are going to be some things there that maybe you don't want the kids to hear just yet. But it is interesting, because do you have dinner with your family? I mean, other than your immediate family, do you have the relatives over like once a week?
No.
It's not like a set thing where every Friday we will get together. Well, that's what this is about, where they get together every. And I think that would be confining, at least for a TV series, a structure that way. But they bring in enough different elements that it is kind of fascinating. The sister who's an influencer stops by in her huge motor home and thinks she's going to make some food in the kitchen with the sister that doesn't like her. And her mother, who is obviously choosing the influencer sister over the other sister. So you can see the kind of problem there's going to be. And then the dad in the show is in a cover band. It's called The Spin Dentists, because he's a dentist.
Instead of a spin doctor?
Right. It's a spin dentist. Then their two sons are at each other all the time. One is a math teacher, and the other one, God knows what he does. He could be in high school. I'm not sure. I haven't seen that many episodes to find out. But they are pranking each other all the time. Well, in the course of the first maybe four or so episodes, you'll see people drop by. There's a neighbor who comes over. And then at one point, the math teacher says his girlfriend's going to stop over for dinner. And they, of course, all get excited and go, oh my God, we're going to get it. I mean, could this be a wedding? Is there, you know how it goes. But they find enough unique aspects that I didn't mind this show at all. I thought it was actually kind of funny.
Okay.
And I could watch one right after another. Michaela Watkins, and you've seen her. She used to be on Saturday Night Live.
Oh, yeah.
She's been playing a lot of mothers for a while. And then Henry Hall. Does that name ring a bell? Henry Hall.
Maybe.
He's Julia Louis-Dreyfus's son.
Oh, sure.
He's
Hall,
one of the
right.
sons.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then there's an influencer. And I, to be honest with you, do I know influencers? Daniel Thrasher, are you familiar with him? He plays the other son.
Okay. I'm not. No, my influencers are probably not the type of people that would show up on a TV show.
Well, I did an interview with him. He was zoomed in from his home. That home was incredible. You could see that behind him, there was either a lot of gifted stuff or he's making bank. This kid has money. But yeah, and then Carol Kane plays the mother, the grandmother of those kids.
Yeah.
And she's good for a laugh. You know, she always does an accent, though. I think we've got to get that out of her system because always an accent. This one's a Russian one. You know, she's poking the kids and there's a problem whenever she shows up. So there's something good there. And then the dad is, and you've seen him in a lot of things, Dan Bacadal.
Mm-hmm.
He's been in a lot of TV series as the same kind of character. Like I say, I was pleasantly surprised. It was probably an R-rated, maybe heavy PG-13 kind of series. And I laughed. So if you can laugh, why not? Just try it out, see what happens. It's on Amazon Freebie. You should have Freebie somewhere in there. If you saw Jury Duty, that was on Freebie. So there's your way to find it. But we're starting now. It's going to be heavy season of a lot of stuff.
Yeah. A lot to watch. All right. So we have the drama. We have the documentary. We have the comedy. So now we need a movie. And
all right.
And we'll end on a little bit of... it's, I guess, a little depressing, but it's also everybody's talking about it right now. It's a lot of buzz behind this movie.
Scare the hell out of me. It's called Civil War, right? And it's about the country being divided. Basically, California and Texas are against the rest of the states. And the people we follow are four journalists who are trying to get to Washington, D.C. to speak to the president before, you know, the rebels get to him. And it's Nick Offerman. So, you know, is he the best person to have as president? I don't know. But Kirsten Dunst is kind of the leader of these pack of journalists. And she's somebody of note. We don't know how, you know, familiar people are with her. She's a photographer. So mm-hmm. our photographers speak. But it's really weird because you're not sure when this is set. They soup up film and they're doing black and white film. And you're thinking, are people doing this anymore? Why wouldn't they just shoot it all on a digital camera? But, you know, that's here nor there. I think that's to give you that kind of odd experience where it all is. But yeah, they're driving and they have a big car that says press on it. Okay, so are people in the media suddenly immune to all of this and they can go anywhere? Or are they like we would see today where that might be a real red flag? So it made me very unsettled. I was worried throughout the whole thing, what was the upshot of this movie? And, you know, it held my interest. I don't know that the ending justifies the journey before it.
Okay.
But this is, I think this is like the Purge. Mm. Very much like the Purge, that there could be another movie that would have something more, or a prequel that would let us know what happened with those two states that they were pulling away from the others.
Okay. It is an interesting combination that California and Texas would join forces.
Don't they seem like opposites? And then kind of Florida's on the bubble. And so if you're from Florida, that's okay.
Right.
But if you're, you know, they go, where are you from? And they would say, well, I'm from, you know, Missouri. Oh, let's think about this. And Jesse Plemons, who's married to Kirsten Dunst, has a little cameo in that is just incredible. He is so good. And he was like hired at the last minute because somebody dropped out. And they needed somebody. And she said, well, what about my husband? He can do it.
Yeah.
So Jesse's there.
Jesse's there. Honey, we need you.
So you're stealing the movie from me. Watch out.
It is kind of funny. Yeah. I mean, the buzz is around all of a sudden around Jesse Plemons. And it's just a small, small role. But yeah.
Right. And it probably took him a couple of days at best to do it.
Yeah.
But he finds the character immediately.
Yeah.
And then I was scared to death of him.
Yeah, this sounds like a good one.
This was that kid from Friday Night Lights that I always wanted to, you know, comfort. And now he's the one that's causing trouble.
Yeah, he's really come into his own. He's had so many notable roles in recent years.
And to bring it all full circle.
Yeah.
He was with Lily Gladstone.
Oh, yeah, that's right. All right. Yeah, kind of. And that was, again, another role where he just kind of wandered into it about two thirds of the way into the movie and really had such a prominent role in the back half of it. But a lot to talk about this week. We have gone full circle, movies, TV, every genre imaginable, it feels like. So a lot going on, you know, a lot still to come, though. Busy summer ahead for us.
I've got some ones in the pocket. We're ready to pull out.
Perfect. All right. Well, on that note, we will wrap, but we will be back again next week with another episode of Streamed and Screened.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.